You are listening to Do You Believe in Magic on OTG and Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Be sure to follow us on iTunes by searching Do You Believe in Magic and subscribe today. What's up, Magic fans? Welcome to Do You Believe in Magic? And we hope that you do. I'm your host, Preston Ellis, and credentialed member of the media and contributor to our home base, OrlandoPinstripePost.com. And we are just 2 weeks away from the NBA draft. To help us talk all things magic, we'll start off with Mr. Aaron Goldstone. How are you doing, sir? How's your summer?
Pretty good. Just getting started. So I'm kind of doing whatever I want. A little bit of gym sessions, yoga, everything I can't do during the school year, so getting back in shape.
Very nice. And we've got that wacky kid in Atlanta, Mr. William Ogburn. Have you wandered onto any Marvel movie sets yet?
No. Actually, a couple of my friends have worked on them, though. I want to see if I can get some side work doing something in that realm.
All right, cool. And also, Zach Oliver, is this the third week in a row or just the second week?
Second week. I wasn't invited last week.
Burn. It's all Will's fault. He told me not to. Remember to follow
0%
us. Remember to follow us at Aaron Goldstone, at Go So Hard, and at DYB in Magic. That is our show's handle. Let's get started with us.
I have a Twitter handle too. What the hell?
Zach Oliver NBA.
Basketball on Twitter? Well.
Everybody's coming after Zach Oliver today on the podcast, or he's retaliating, I should say. Let's get started with Steve Clifford. If you guys haven't already, make sure to download my interview with Dim Krangis of Forum Blue and Gold, Nylon Calculus, and Real B-Ball Insider. He's going to break down why he had the best offensive scheme in the NBA last year with the Charlotte Hornets. But let's talk about him. He's assimilating his head coaching staff from Charlotte. He has not yet appointed a lead assistant, but he's been making the rounds. He met with Evan Fournier, Vucevic. Apparently, he's going to Los Angeles to talk to Aaron Gordon. He's the fifth coach, I think, since 2015, if you include interim coach James Borrego, who now is the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets, I believe. And Jeff Weltman said, "We're here at the end, and I'm thrilled with the result." Now that we've had a week, we'll start with Zach. How are you feeling about Steve Clifford? I know a lot of people wanted a sexier, younger hire, but we've got Steve Clifford. What are your thoughts?
I think it's the same as it was last week. I think that they made a very safe hire, and I think that Clifford, and he's slowly starting to assemble his staff, and I think once he gets that in place, they'll really be able to get churning here with the pre-draft workouts. I mean, we've already had a couple. Trae Young was in Orlando today, which is obviously a big name on draft boards for Magic fans. So, I still like the Clifford hiring. I think it's safe, and I think it'll end up paying off for them, at least in the short term.
Awesome. We'll go over to Aaron Goldstone. We got some nice quotes. Marvin Williams, he says, he takes what players do really well and he focuses on those things and helps you develop your weaknesses. He had some other quotes basically just saying that players who play under Steve Clifford are comfortable. They don't have to think. And we know that was such a problem for the Magic last year when guys got forced into ISO basketball, stop moving the ball. Shelvin Mack, I remember specifically, was quoted after several games. I was in the locker room and he consistently said that guys weren't trusting each other. And when I talk to Tim Krangis, this is not a problem in Steve Clifford's offense. If anything, everybody has so confidently instilled into their mind what they're supposed to do that whether or not they have the talent on the floor, they're going to play the right way. Is that your thought, Aaron?
I think so. I could kind of get a vibe from him from the press conference. You could just kind of feel a different intensity. Coach Vogel, I have a lot of respect for, and I think he did a better job than people give him credit for this last year, adjusting to a different kind of style in the NBA. You know, he played so slow pace-wise in those years with the Pacers, and he adjusted a little bit and changed some things, but still people kind of viewed Vogel as this NBA dinosaur coach, also as someone that had lost the locker room as far as holding people accountable. You heard some rumors about that kind of stuff. So I don't think that's going to be a problem with Steve Clifford. I could just feel kind of his intensity. He reminded me a lot, and I'm not the only person that thought about this. He reminded me a lot of Scott Skiles, the same kind of vibe. If you could just kind of see like veins and muscles in his jaw and his face just kind of you know, kind of clench when he would get a question that he didn't really love, even at an introductory press conference. So you could feel the passion and the intensity in the room. And, you know, I think he's going to come in and totally change, kind of turn that locker room upside down and change kind of the vibe. I don't know how much right away winning, you know, that's going to lead to, but it'll definitely be a change.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of his assistants. Not too many notable names. Pat Delaney, of course, was the Heat video coordinator before becoming a G League head coach, as well as Steve Hetzel. And he's got two other names that I'm going to look up right now. But kind of in that same vein, he has not appointed like a lead assistant or somebody with any kind of notoriety in terms of changing an offense around, instilling some kind of culture. Who do you have any thoughts on the Magic finding a lead assistant? Why do you think it's taking so long? Is it just too late in the game? Have all the good ones gotten snatched up, or do you hope that there's still time before the draft to add somebody notable?
Well, I think they're still kind of figuring things out. And I mean, if you listen to Weltman, like you said, he likes to take his time with things. You know, they said that they like to control things as much as they can. So I think that you've waited this long, you might as well just wait it out and get the guy, because it's not like there are that many hiring is going on. It seems like most coaching staffs are more or less put together. So if you like the guy, you know, you can be talking to him. You can talk about the particulars. You can get everything hammered out, because the phase of the rush is already gone. Really quick, how classic NBA is it that James Borrego is now the Hornets coach and Steve Clifford is now the Magic coach? That's fantastic.
And the other two names added today, Mike Batiste and Bruce Kreutzer. I guess those guys were also formerly of Steve Clifford. So he's pretty much brought his entire staff over here. Thank you for that information, Philip Rossman Reich of OrlandoMagicDaily.com. Some of the other notable names, Monty Williams got hired as the lead assistant for the 76ers. Very happy for him. Let's go back to Zach. Of course, you mentioned that Trae Young was in town today. There's been a lot of talk about him. Wendell Carter has kind of been interesting. The Duke, the long-armed wing, and that's kind of the direction the NBA is going. If you watch some of these playoff series, a lot of those guys seeing floor time and getting moved to the four and the five spot. It's just a bunch of guys who are 6'6 to 6'10 all across the court. Has anything changed in your mind in that regard? Do you still see the Magic as selecting Trae Young?
I never saw the Magic picking Trae Young. Well, okay. I guess I shouldn't say that. I can see them picking Trae Young. I don't think that it's the right pick for them. I shared my thoughts on him last week. I think that there's just going to be some shortcomings with him, and I still feel that way. Obviously, there's still a lot to look at, and there's a lot of guys. I mean, we could even – I think that there's still a chance that we could see them, you know, possibly look to trade back if a team offers them something that makes sense. You know, they could trade back, maybe pick up a second pick. You know, maybe they even try to move back into like the late lottery and take, you know, maybe they take like Wendell Carter early and then, you know, try to snag like Colin Sexton or Alexander from Kentucky late to play point guard. So I think that they have a lot more options than Trae Young. And I think it's a little foolish in this draft to just zero in on Young as the guy.
Yeah, definitely. We had some conversations with Tim Kranz, just basically just saying that the volume that he had as a player would have put him in the top 100 players in the NBA in just 32 games. That's how high a volume he had, and said that they had one of the worst schematics in the NCAA in Oklahoma, and that's why he was forced to take shots from 5 to 6 feet behind the NBA three-point line, because they just were generating no offense outside of him. Let's go over to Aaron. You've had some terrific articles on OrlandoPinstripePost.com in regards to some of the point guards that might be available in the early part of the second round, where the Magic have two picks thanks to the Phoenix Suns. Let's see. Okay, no, those are different names. What are the names? Aaron Holiday, Javon Carter, Jalen Brunson, Eli Okobo, Shake Milton, any of these names drawing your fancy right now?
Yeah, so I've, you know, had to kind of go through a lot of the, you know, scouting report videos and kind of YouTube highlight reels and stuff to kind of get a feel for some of these people, especially Eli Okobo, because playing professionally in France, obviously I haven't seen him play a lot, but he's really the one guy that I've been taking a look at that I've really kind of taking a liking to, you know, left-handed is just, you know, there's such a sweet, you know, stroke from distance, left-handed, and he's got a good size for a point guard at 6'3". He's really athletic and really long, but he kind of gets this vibe. I get this vibe when I watch him play. He obviously watches a lot of James Harden. He doesn't have James Harden size, but like he's got these perimeter moves, the side steps, the pump fakes, the stroke, the release. It looks carbon copy. And you know, when you're picking in the second round, if you're gonna just kind of swing for the fences on a guy, he's somebody that you know, I really like. Now, unfortunately, he's come over and done some workouts and really killed them. So now they're talking about Okobo maybe in the first round. So I don't know if he's played his way out of Orlando's range. One other guy I wanted to plug, and I'm just finishing up kind of a deep dive on him today, is Josh Okogie from Georgia Tech. And I had literally never really seen him play until I did a look on him at the combine. He measured 6'4 with a 7-foot wingspan, which is a +8 difference height to wingspan. And I watch him, and I mean, I see so much Victor Oladipo on his film. He had the highest vertical leap at the combine. He had the best three-quarter sprint at the combine. Just a freak, world-class athlete. Probably if the Magic were able to land him, they'd have to trade back into the late first. But he's a guy that I just kind of fell in love with watching tape. So those two guys, Okobo and Okogie from Nigeria, two guys that are names to watch for sure.
Will, we were talking off the air basically about Evan Fournier, Nikola Vucevic, some guys the Magic might prefer to move on from at this point. However, cap space is at a premium in the NBA, and nobody can just assimilate these guys' contracts. They'd have to offload some kind of matching salary, and in that instance, the Magic would probably get stuck with some kind of negative salary, like an Evan Turner might be an interesting swap with Portland, or we even discussed with Memphis if Orlando wanted to move up in the draft a couple of spots and maybe pick up a second first round pick in 2021, they might be able to swing somebody like Chandler Parsons for Evan Fournier and take on negative salary now, but it helps build towards the future. This being I think year 7 of the rebuild at this point, Will, what are some of your ideas that the Magic could explore in the draft in order to maybe not necessarily swing for the fences, but kind of change things up and do something kind of sexy to give us fans some interest?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Magic are obviously in a bad situation cap-wise, but I think that there are teams that are worse, and I was kind of knocking around maybe sending Fournier to Memphis and swapping picks and then taking on some of their salary. Now, you guys counted with that might have to be the Chandler Parsons deal, which would be rough, but I think that it's all about the timetable and how we value it. It would be nice to have two first-round picks, like Zach was talking about. I think that that's a little bit more attainable. I think that you look at, like, obviously it gives you more bites at the apple, and the Magic have so many needs. It'd be good to get guys in camps. And I think that, you know, you talked about the 7 years of the rebuild. I guess the only piece that we really have from like the OG rebuild is, well, I guess it's those two, because Vooch came over at the very beginning and Fournier was like shortly after that. So I think that there's kind of two different Magic teams that are going on here. I'm kind of taking Biombo out of the equation there in terms of guys that are part of the future plans. There's Evan and Vooch, who are obviously very linked. They're of similar age, and they're not as old as people think. You know, they're in their mid-20s. Definitely, I think their best basketball is ahead of both of them. But I think that some teams, you mentioned like a Portland would make great use of a guy like that, especially to offload some bad salary. But I think there's kind of two Magic teams. There's those two guys who, I guess on most teams you could see them as leaders, but what's their value there? We've kind of seen it. Whereas there's this whole other like generation of younger guys, including this next draft pick or these next draft picks that I feel like are truly going to be the future. So how long do they want to be married to that older generation of this rebuild?
One thing that I want to add to, or you know, counter a little bit with what Will was saying too, was, you know, if you're taking on a guy like a Chandler Parsons who has 2 years and somewhere around $50 million left owed still, realistically, in the next 2 years, are you expecting the Magic to A, be taking that huge step forward, or B, be looking to, you know, possibly make a splash in free agency? Because if not, it's not hurting you too much to take on that contract. I was talking before we came on, in the SB Nation mock, I've had some talks with some teams you know, late in the lottery, and I've, you know, looked at taking on some future salary to get that second pick like Will was suggesting. And, you know, I don't think that it's I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea, because they're not going to be a team in a position to go and make a big splash in free agency.
Yeah, Terrence Ross, another possibility there, a guy who's an expiring contract, a wing who can shoot the three. If he comes back and shows that he's healthy, he could be somebody movable. We've got a lot of questions in regards to all these. Steven Cameron, what are some realistic trade-type situations for a guy? We're just going to cover all these right now. The Magic can't offload any of these guys who are making $10 million plus unless they take back salary. So depending on the salary they take back is going to quantify the value of what they receive. Now, what that means is what we were just saying. If they take back bad salary, they can potentially get more. If they take back, you know, somebody who's on the same level, they're probably not going to get back much, if at all. Nikola Vucevic is at a position that's not a premium in the NBA anymore. And of course, last year, he didn't play the level of defense needed to be in that all-star level conversation. Evan Fournier is making a lot of money. Somebody would have to offload a lot of salary. But we've talked about all this. Let's transition. Aaron, get in there. Of course, the Clippers have two first-round picks in 12 and 13. They might seek to move up. Of course, the Boston Celtics have potentially five first-round picks in 2019, including, and I'm doing this off of memory, I want to say the 76ers, the Kings, the Grizzlies, and the Clippers, in addition to their own. Do you see the Magic, I don't know, playing fast and loose in the draft, or do you think they're just going to take the best player available?
I think they're going to take the best player available at six. I know the 12 and 13 right there with the Clippers looks viable. I don't know. I'm more of a quality over quantity person, and I think I'd rather get the player they want, the best player available at six, and get two guys at 12 and 13 that could probably help, but are just, you know, okay. Maybe a little bit better than okay, but I guess the point I'm making is, you know, look what this management group did last year. You know, they had four picks in the draft, and they punted two of the four because they didn't want to have too overwhelmingly of a young roster. And so it seems to me, again, from what I've heard, that they're going to go with two more guys to add to the two guys from last year, Isaac and Owundu. Like, they're not going to want to, again, bring in three, four, you know, 19, 20-year-olds. Even if maybe that's what they should do, honestly. I mean, you know, why not? They're a completely rebuilding, you know, roster. I wanted to answer, I noticed one of the questions from Twitter from Ben Saunders I'm looking at right now. And I don't know, something Will said kind of triggered my memory of this. He says, is it fair to say that the Magic fans are viewing this as year seven of the rebuild? And I don't think that's fair. I think you have to, as hard as it is, erase everything that happened with Rob Hennigan. He was fired. Most of those players are gone. I mean, this really is year two. And this fan base, like, they're so hesitant to lose Aaron Gordon because of Oladipo and yada, yada, yada. And they're so hesitant to draft people because of this and that. And you have to be able to put that behind you, because I promise you, Jeff Weltman, John Hammond, like, they're not worrying about making mistakes because Rob Hennigan made mistakes. Like, they're going to do what they think is right, and they're not going to rush this. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, do it right, and also do it fast. I want to make the playoffs next year. Like, it just doesn't work that way. So this is legitimately, in my view, year two of rebuild 2.0, as hard as that may be to swallow.
Well, yeah, I agree with Aaron. I think that you have to kind of push that aside. I mean, we've beat it to death. We're beating a dead horse, and it's time that we just look at what we have now. And I think that they're in good hands. And, you know, yes, it sucks that they're in another rebuild, and it's a very prolonged one, just like the Sacramento Kings have been in. But, you know, it's a new regime. It's year two. It's their chance to go and shine. Piggybacking off of something that you said, Preston, the Celtics have the potential to have three more picks next year. The Clippers pick is top 14 protected. They could get Memphis's pick, which is top 8 protected, and then they'll get the more favorable of Philadelphia or Sacramento.
Great. So that's something that I wanted to bring up with you. I'll go ahead and throw this to Will next. Danny Ainge is said to have interest in Mohamed Bamba. Man, I'm not even going to try. Should he fall to six and the Magic are in that position to take on somebody like a Terry Rozier and a Daniel Theis and potentially two or three first round picks, would you make that move? Mo Bamba, there it is.
So what's been kind of interesting to me is as I look at different draft boards, he's a guy that I feel like is starting to shoot up. And that's kind of what actually made me think of like maybe the Magic should start to move up as well, because if you look at kind of the way it's going, he has been very active lately and he's kind of been putting his name out there and people are starting to realize that he's just a physical freak. So I think that especially the odds of him getting past Dallas at five, I don't think they're very good. So I'm not really sure that that's where the Magic need to move as far as like, I mean, honestly, I think if he's there, the Magic should just take him because I think he fits with what they're doing. But I think that if the Celtics are really married to the idea of getting Mo Bamba, I think they're going to have to aim higher and maybe they could do like what we were talking about with the Grizzlies, or maybe they could get up even higher. But yeah, like I said, like it's seeming like that top four, you know, we never know. People never know other than people that are truly, truly like plugged in. But it seems like as you get out of that kind of top four players of like Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., Mo Bamba, and then it seems to be like, do we want Bagley? Do we want Trey? Everyone seems like a little bit more of a gamble after that. So yeah, to answer your question, sorry, I think that Bamba's going to be gone by the time the Magic pick.
All right. Well, it could be interesting. Right now, it's slated as if all four centers are going to go with those five picks, and Doncic is going to go somewhere in between there as well. Thank you to your questions. JD, hashtag AD for MVP, asked about the second round picks. I think we covered that a little bit later with some guys who Aaron's been writing about, like Landry Shamet, Kiri Thomas, Tony Carr, Devontae Graham, although some of those guys have moved up on the board since we last spoke about them. We answered Stephen Cameron's question about realistic trades for Nikola Vucevic. Let's go back. A lot of questions about Mario Hezonja from both JD and Ringo, asking about the possibility of him bringing back. The waters have been kind of tepid on that. We haven't heard too much from his camp, not a lot from social media. Aaron, have you heard anything about Hezonja, and what do you think the interest will be for him on the free agent market?
No, haven't heard anything about Hezonja. I know, you know, he's out of town, but look, I think every day that we move further into the summer and further away from the end of last season, more space between Hezonja and his camp and the Magic. I know he was saying all the right things in the last year, but it's you know, reality versus what he was saying. As much as maybe he found something with the Magic, Coach Vogel has now moved on, and Vogel in a way had really kind of re-energized his career by playing the power forward. I know Vogel's staff had worked so tirelessly to get Hezonja on the floor and kind of get him up to speed in the NBA defensively. They're all gone. And I just, look, the Magic can only offer him $5 million and change. And it's hard to believe, but there's going to be a team out there that could probably offer him a little bit more, maybe even on just a one-year deal or something like that with the team option for a second or something. So the Magic are pretty limited what they can offer Hezonja. So it would have to be kind of a wink-wink handshake deal where, look, we're going to pay you a little bit less next year, but then we'll promise to extend you and sign you long-term after that. And really, he's only going to jump at that if the Magic can give him a more definitive role. And, like, what kind of role can they promise him with Jonathan Isaac, with this number six pick, which we don't know who it's going to be, with hopefully Aaron Gordon. So it's one of those things where I think both parties are going to move on. If not, they would have just picked up his option at the beginning of the year. I mean, that would have been the play.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? Sorry, you know what's crazy about Mario is like, this is kind of like a lesson in like how much does social media matter? Because Mario has always been so just like open with everything. You know, like he started a Twitter and it says like forward for the Orlando Magic. I'm looking at it right now, and he's like tweeting at Magic players, tweeting about Magic players. And like, if you're a person who believes in that kind of thing and thinks that matters, you might be like, oh, Mario loves it here. He has so many friends. Like da da da. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like the opposite of what happened to Marcus Cousins. And I think that at the end of the day, all of it means nothing. So, like, you're absolutely right. I think that it's about role.
Zach, if they do use all their three picks, as Aaron just mentioned, Do you think there's even a place for him if there's three 20-year-olds that come into the locker room? There's going to have to create space for that. You would think they're not going to move on from guys like Wesley Iwundu and Ken Burch. So somebody's going to have to go. What's the likelihood you think he's back?
Aaron kind of, I think, shared my general consensus on it at the end there. There's 0% chance he's back next season, I think. That ship sailed once they declined his option. And I think it's been pretty clear that his time in Orlando has been very underwhelming overall. And yes, he did show some signs of positivity towards the end of last season. But if he's not going to have, you know, a real refined role, he's not going to stay. And if they wanted to keep him, they would have picked up his option. So I think that it's pretty clear that Hezonja's time in Orlando is over. But I did have a question for Aaron regarding the draft. Somebody that it's a name that I've, you know, tossed around as, you know, maybe somebody who's available in that second round, didn't play this past season, but D'Anthony Melton from USC. Have you looked at him at all, and what are your thoughts on him?
I have. I know he is a plus defender. A lot of people have compared him kind of to like a Marcus Smart role, where, you know, if he gets in the right system, you know, he could be a positive NBA player, you know, from his defensive contributions. He's long. He measured at the combine like about an inch to an inch and a half shorter than I thought he was. I thought he was like 6'3", 6'4", and he came in more around like 6'2". But I believe it was like a 6'11 wingspan, super long. So his shot is complete garbage, or at least it was his freshman year in college. I mean, we're talking like 20% from deep, and he's been working with shooting coaches, and he's been working with trainers, and there's all sorts of videos out there in the gym of him just knocking down shots, and he looks a lot better. But you know how that goes. The empty gym is a little bit different than on film, so that's kind of what I worry about him. And look, I need to take my own advice. I was just telling fans to forget about the last few years. All I can think about is Elfrid Payton when I watch him. Now, he's going to be a much better – Melton's going to be a much better defensive player than Payton. I think he's more of like what we thought Payton would be, you know, athletic, defensive. But it just worries me that his shot and his offensive contributions – I mean, look, if he's going to be in the second round, then sure, why not go for it? But, you know, I wouldn't use – a first round pick on him. I know Ricky over at Orlando Magic Daily is really, really high on him. I'm not, I guess. Out of a guard, I like to see somebody with a little bit more offensive upside, especially some of the other people in this class.
All right, Zach, this is from Fred Ragand. I hope I said that right. Do you think that Jonathan Isaac can play center?
Ooh. Man. That's a really interesting question, actually. I think in certain lineups he can. You know, if the Magic were to kind of deploy their version of Golden State's death lineup, per se, they could, you know, possibly run Isaac at the center position with Aaron Gordon at the four. And then if there's, you know, a very limited change in the roster, you know, Evan Fournier, Terrence Ross, and then, you know, for the hypothetical, we'll say they draft Trae Young. I think that would be the situation where Isaac plays center. I don't think that he'll be a center moving forward. I think he's a four. He would have to bulk up a lot to play center, I think, because he would still get tossed around by some of the bigger guys. And especially with the influx of big men this year, I think that we're going to start seeing a little bit more importance on guys who can, you know, play with their back to the basket a little bit more again. And, you know, that's just going to hurt him if he's still pretty thin. So I don't think he's a center.
Well, early in Anthony Davis' career, he went on the record saying that he didn't want to play center, and so Dell Demps acquired Omar Asik, Alexis Ajinsa, and finally DeMarcus Cousins. But when it gets to crunch time, we see more NBA teams going with a player like Anthony Davis or Giannis Antetokounmpo at the five position, giving you a perimeter player who can also like kind of defend the paint with their length, not necessarily their size, although we do expect all of these players to gain more bulk. And we've already seen some photos of how big Jonathan Isaac's arms are getting. Do you think there's a future, not just with his body type, but just the way the NBA is heading, that 5 years from now, Jonathan Isaac does embody the typical starting five?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, well, first off, I would like to say that I don't think he's a center. I would agree with Zach in that aspect. But I mean, you know, going back to Anthony Davis, he did exactly what everyone thought that he would. He, surrounded by four shooters, is a terrifying lineup. And I think that for the Orlando Magic, it would have to be something similar. I think that Jonathan Isaac playing the five really depends on his health, number one, his size, and then also if they can surround him with shooters, because if not, what's the point? Like, if it's him and guys that are out there just playing iso ball, it's like, well, he can't, you know, he's not going to be a tenacious rebounder yet. He's not going to have any of the fundamentals that come with being a back-to-the-basket center. So really what you'd need to do is get guys out there that can hit jumpers and that can help him off the fast break. So I think that while I'd say it's about half and half, I think that he needs to improve those aspects of his game. And first and foremost, he needs to stay healthy. But I think if the Magic can design, you know, I don't know if we'll call it a death lineup, maybe like a mild inconvenience or a head cold lineup at this point. But if these guys can grow up, they'll be a death lineup one day. And if they can just learn and develop like that, and like Zach said, maybe 10 minutes a game of that, and then just as it starts to succeed, you know, we saw Aaron Gordon play center with mixed results. They have a lot of guys that can go out there and play multiple roles. So I think that flexibility is huge.
And I think also a lot of what Jonathan Isaac's future holds depends on what they do in this draft. If they take a Mohamed Bamba or if they take a Wendell Carter, that's signifying that Isaac is your four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go over to Aaron. Aaron Gordon has to play that position as well, unless they're going to try their luck again at putting him at the three. Eventually, if these two guys are going to pair together, somebody's going to have to play the four and somebody's going to have to play the five. And if you put Wendell Carter there at the three, that still shifts the two of those guys, or one of them is coming off the bench, which wouldn't be the end of the world, just heading into Jonathan Isaac's second season, specifically with what he's been dealing with his ankles. What's your take on this? And I also want to go back to what Will and Zach were saying. If they do go with a center, then obviously that shifts everybody's position. Where would you have these guys play, Aaron?
Yeah, well, I mean, if they took Wendell Carter, I mean, he would absolutely be the five. He's about 260 pounds. I know he's caught a little bit of weight, but he's your traditional, you know, he's an Al Horford type. You know, he's a center, so he would not be on the wing, even though he does have the ability to hit an outside shot. But it's true what Zach and Will were saying. You know, Isaac is the wild card because I think I said this last week, he only played a third of the season, and so you don't really know what you have in him, and so it's hard to make a decision in this draft if you truly believe Isaac is part of the cornerstone of the franchise, because you don't really know like what he is. I mean, I guess it helps that the NBA is going positionless, and to answer your question, I don't think he's like a center in the traditional sense of like Patrick Ewing and like Hakeem Olajuwon were centers, but we all know that the two-point shot is the most inefficient shot in the NBA right now. So, you know, unless you're right at the rim, like dump the ball into the post and get turnaround 10, 15 footers, like those days are gone. So maybe he could just be the pseudo center in a centerless lineup where it's just forwards. Like that's fine. I mean, that's kind of like what Golden State does and Houston does anyway. So I think they could get away with that. Picking a center like Bamba or Carter, while they may be a plus player, would kind of pigeonhole the Magic now to now have something to deal with where they have to probably trade Aaron Gordon or Jonathan Isaac. You know, I'm not afraid of signing Aaron Gordon because I think whatever you sign him to, he's still tradable in the future. Like you saw the Magic bring back Tobias Harris when he was a restricted free agent, had no problem trading him. Aaron Gordon's going to be a little bit more money, but the point is he'll be young enough where he'll still be wanted. So they're going to have to figure it out. Like Zach said, this pick at number six will be really telling of what they plan for Jonathan Isaac, because I'll be really interested to see if they go guard or center or what the heck they're thinking.
And, yeah, let's. You know, Yeah, go ahead.
Playing off of what you were saying about Aaron being able to play at the three, obviously we saw how much of a train wreck that was 2 years ago. But I think it's complicated. I think Aaron has such an advantage with his speed against fours, even with even with the game, you know, going more positionless like we've talked about. But I think he potentially could play the three some, which, you know, if you have to bring one of Isaac or Gordon off the bench, that's not the end of the world, because then you're sure of having, you know, two potentially plus players at one position. And like Aaron was saying, you can move on from one of them. Both of them will be tradable. Even if Aaron Gordon gets a max, if he continues on his arc, he'll be tradable. So I'm not comfortable putting Aaron Gordon at the three. I think that it's possible he could. And I think that, you know, with Isaac's skill set and with Gordon's, you know, as they both continue to develop, you know, we'll be able to see them be interchangeable parts. You know, one can play the three offensively, the four defensively, and vice versa.
You know what's crazy about, like, last year? It feels like, to some degree, it was a bit of a lost season. And I say that because, like, Aaron Gordon...
Is
so
it
you
because
say,
you left us? And you
oh, yeah. You lost me. That's why it was a lost season. But, no, so what's crazy about Aaron is that if you had asked us in, what, like, December, January-ish, could he shoot? It would be like, oh, yeah, he's turned the corner. Easy. So I'm looking at his splits right now. In the month of January, he shot 20% from three. That's really bad. And he took a lot of attempts. He actually played... 11 games in January and shot 20% from three. So before that, he was killing it. He shot like 60% in his first five games of the season, but it was a steady decline throughout the season. So the thing is, I think that his ability to shoot obviously is huge. So when you were talking about can he play the three, and it was a train wreck before, you're absolutely right. I wouldn't necessarily rule it out, but I've never really seen a player, I mean, maybe if I thought hard enough, but like he seemed to have turned that corner so definitively, and then he just turned it right back. So like that part of him is still in there somewhere. I think maybe, you know, as the season goes on, games start to mean less and guys start to phone in a little bit, but you know, you need to have that consistent shot out of him, because that's why it ultimately failed, is that his handle wasn't as good as it was 2 years ago. Like his handle got better over last summer for sure, but I think that he needs to have like a consistent handle. He needs to have a consistent shot. I'm not gonna rule it out because basketball's more positionless even than when we first started thinking about that. But yeah, it seems like it's far from a foregone conclusion.
Well, there's also, you know, some typical regression to the mean there, because, you know, as a lot of people have talked about, the Magic shot 750% from the field the first week and a half, 2 weeks of the season.
Right.
And Aaron Gordon was included there. So there's going to be some regression. I do agree that looking at the splits, it's startling to see him go from, you know, being a 60% shooter early to 20% just a few months later. But if he can, what would you guys say, if Aaron can shoot 36, 37% from three and at least be a threat, you know, that makes him a little bit more viable to play at the three? Or do you think he needs to be, you know, closer to that 40% clip to really, you know, be a threat there?
I think the most important thing is the way he's able to defend these guys, and that's going to be based on matchups. If he can chase out other defenders on the perimeter, he's up to 34% from three last year, and like you said, that's a bit skewed because he was so hot, but it did balance itself out back in January. But based on his numbers and trajectory, he had 18-8 in just 35 minutes last year. He's been scoring more and more every season, getting more and more comfortable. According to Tim Kranjes, under Steve Clifford, everybody's going to know their role. There's going to be less of this ISO basketball. And more of those three-pointers are likely going to go in. His efficiency is going to increase. And if we see his numbers rise to 20 and 10, there is a likelihood, if the Magic are able to win 13 more games with an NBA-ready player like Trae Young, if they go from like 25 to, let's say, 35 or maybe 38, there is a possibility with Kristaps Porzingis' injury that Aaron Gordon is considered among the All-Stars next year. I know it's unlikely at this point in time. But Aaron, what's your thought on this about moving him to the three position? Obviously, we all think his more natural position is at the four. But in today's NBA, like you said, it's positionless. Pretty much based on how these guys are playing, you can play them anywhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would just depend on personnel and like who you're up against that night. Maybe something to think about. You know, everybody is like, oh, well, he's got to shoot this percentage to make him a three and not a four. Like, don't teams want stretch fours? Like, what's the difference? Like, don't power forwards have to shoot, like, really well from three-point range, like, as well? Like, we've gone away from, like, the Charles Oakleys at power forward. So I just want him to shoot well. Like, I don't care if he plays the one, two, three, four, or five. Like, I want him to keep shooting not as hot as he was at the beginning of the year, but not as complete dumpster fire as he was the last couple months of the season. Like, settle in with a little bit of consistency. And, you know, if that's at the three or the four, I actually don't really see that big of a difference. You know, point guards, got to have them. Centers, got to be more versatile than they've ever been, but got to have them. And then you've got like some two, three, fours that just seem to all blend together, 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". And he's one of those. Maybe we just need to like all kind of refocus our cookie cutter depth chart minds away from the traditional three, fours. And hopefully he continues to shoot more consistently. His shot selection was really bad. If you clean that up, I think his percentages will be better. You know, the form looks good. The form looks good. It looks better than it was his rookie year. I think when he gets his feet set and he's balanced, that makes a big difference. And I expect him to hopefully rebound next year and settle in around 36, 37. That would be perfect.
One more thing on him really quick. Sorry. I would say that 2 years ago, one of the biggest like positive takeaways from the season was how good Aaron Gordon was defensively as a wing. I remember them putting him on Kawhi, putting him on James Harden. And I think that was one of the biggest areas of
– yeah.
Yeah, and I think, in my opinion, he regressed defensively last year, possibly because his usage and his role went up. But I would also argue that he's not built to guard a player like Anthony Davis. He's not built to guard Giannis. In fact, he guarded those players very poorly, in my opinion. So I honestly think that him defensively is a great fit at the modern three, and less so at the modern four. So ideally, he could work up to that.
And I think that kind of plays off what I was saying with Isaac and Gordon being interchangeable offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And also to Aaron's point, you know, I agree that Aaron's shot selection was rather poor at times throughout the season. And I think that some of that probably comes from him. Obviously we're not in the players' heads and they're not going to say this directly, but I got the sense that Aaron was really kind of putting some pressure on himself to take that big step and become a star. And I think that this is something that I talked with Philip Rosmarek of Orlando Magic Daily about before. You know, it felt like Aaron was trying to feel it out himself and figure out what it actually took to be a star. You know, maybe that'll be something that helps him take that next step and be even better next season. But I think A, the shot selection has to get better. And B, like Will was saying, he needs to return to the same player defensively to really tap into his full potential.
All right. We hope Steve Clifford's listening. That's all the time we have now, you guys. Thank you so much for your support. And remember, you can now find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Podbean, pretty much wherever pods are found. If I miss one, let me know, and I'll be sure to add it to that site as well. Please do us a favor, retweet this episode. Whoever's been retweeting us, we name dropped some of you guys on last week's episode and earlier the guys sending the questions. We really appreciate it. You guys have really helped our numbers. So thank you. We'll give you guys another special shout out on next week's episode. For now, at Aaron Goldstone, at Go So Hard, at Zach Oliver NBA. Aaron, tell us some of the stuff you're working on this week.
There's an article on Orlando Pinstripe Post right now, kind of my breakdown of Shake Milton, the all-name prospect of this draft. I kind of hope the Magic draft him just so we all can write and talk about Shake Milton for the next 3 to 5 years. But 6'6", guard, tons of length, played at SMU around some other pros, Semi Ojeleye and Sterling Brown, and kind of interesting prospect. So that's on there right now.
Bro, can y'all imagine Phil if we draft Shake Milton? I bet Zach's going to walk up there and just like Kanye that draft pick. He's like, nope, no Shake Milton. Phil, get out of here.
All right. What do you got going on, Will?
Man, I was just making a lot of home improvement gifts. Yeah, no, I got it. Like I said, guys, we got to get a roundtable going. But I still need to focus in on that. My weekly update of saying that, but I will do it eventually. So,
all right, and finally, Mr. Zach Oliver.
Honestly, I just need to get getting in on some draft stuff. I've been talking with people a lot about it, around, and I feel like I've got some interesting opinions, and I teased it a little bit, but I think we'll slowly start to see some stuff leaking from the SB Nation mock as we start making picks here soon. So maybe we'll have a big trade going down in Magic Land in that mock. So we'll see what happens.
Very cool. You guys can follow me recapping on Orlando Pinstripe Post, this podcast, as well as the birdrights.com, our Bird Calls podcast. And once every week, I put in a free agent article on otgbasketball.com. So if you want to follow me, check out that. Follow me at DYB in Magic. That's this show's handle. And also at Preston Ellis, if you want to follow me about Pelican stuff. For now, thank you guys for listening.
Wait, Preston, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Since you're our gracious host here and you cover the Pelicans also. Would you want the Pelicans to try to put a package together for Evan Fournier? If so, what would you offer?
So we have talked about this. Actually, we've talked about the Magic quite a bit just because I'm so familiar with them based on this podcast. But it definitely has to do with, like I was saying earlier, offloading bad salary, because the Pelicans have no wiggle room right now at all. And all indications point to DeMarcus Cousins coming back to New Orleans, and that's going to cripple them, put them into the luxury tax. They don't even have the means to bring back Rajon Rondo, Ian Clark, Darius Miller, Cheick Diallo, Emeka Okafor, those non-guaranteed contracts. So they're going to have to offload somebody somewhere. And if they want to bring in additional talent, they're going to have to offload Solomon Hill and Alexis Ajensa. Alexis is an expiring, so he's not of value right now, but come February, the trade deadline, you might have a couple of teams want some of that space. To offload like somebody making $5 million, like let's say somebody like Shelvin Mack. But in this instance, if the Pelicans were to take on 2 years of Evan Fournier, it would most likely involve Solomon Hill, Alexis Ajensa, and a first round pick. They're not going to part with Etuan Moore unless they get a positive, a very nice prospect back. So it's going to have to take some kind of bad salary dump. Not to say Etuan Moore and Nikola Mirotic aren't movable, but they would want a lot back in return just based on the versatility those guys provide. The shooting Etuan Moore and Nikola Mirotic and Anthony Davis played very, very well together, with Nikola Mirotic taking some of those minutes at the five. And he's going to have to do that again because DeMarcus Cousins is probably only going to play like 15 to 20 minutes a game. Sorry, this is long-winded, but basically it would mean offloading bad salary and potentially sacrificing maybe a first and a second round pick in 2019 once the 2018 pick conveys to Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think the Pelicans could be a team that obviously would take some work, but they're a team that I feel like Fournier would fit on and fill a need, because I felt like they really needed another wing in the playoffs. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it, especially since we were talking a lot about Fournier and potential moves.
No, the more interesting one to me, the one that seems like it would be a bit simpler, is based on the Magic's regards of Etuan Moore, maybe a pretty simple swap, Etuan Moore for Jonathan Simmons, or even Etuan Moore for the final year of Terrence Ross. But the Pelicans do regard him very highly, but they do have such a critical need at that three position, and Simmons and Terrence Ross have both shown that they can play it. So it's just a matter of how these two teams value their players, but that would be the swap that I would look to as being a more realistic possibility.
That's fair. I'm torn on whether or not the Magic move Jonathan Simmons this offseason. I lean towards no, but I think that there's a chance.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Thanks,
Preston,
so much.
Preston, yes. Can I jump in here with one?
Totally.
I leaked this to, I'll be real quick. I leaked this to Liberty Ballers, our SB Nation affiliates that cover the Sixers, and I'm still waiting to hear back from them. But obviously we know what all went down with Mr. Colangelo, and we don't want to, or Mrs. Colangelo, I guess. We don't want to get into all that. We now have Brett Brown coaching the team and filling in as a general manager. They have, I think, 5 picks in this draft, and he just seems like he would be overwhelmed as it is. They do have a lottery pick, but the Sixers own number 26. And if there was a guy the Magic were looking at in the second round and they didn't want to wait until the second round, kind of like how they brought in Kyle Kuzma three times last year and they tried to wait to the second round, if he was gone, right? If there was a guy they targeted, 26 seems like a pick that would be for sale. The Sixers, you know, how many more young players do they really need? That's who I would be calling. I would be offering Shelvin Mack because he could be waived. That would save the Sixers $5 million, extra money to make a run at whatever free agents they're making a run at. I think that's a very, very viable and reasonable deal. Maybe we could take back, the Mets could take back Jared Bayless, you know, and just, you know, take the pill and pay him for another year or two or whatever, and buy the 26th pick and get their guy there.
I like it. I think that's interesting. You know, you look at a few other teams down there, you know, maybe even a team like Boston could be looking to move a pick. Let's see, the Lakers don't have an earlier first rounder.
Hey, Boston has so many picks. Do you think that they could get something nice for Vooch? Because they just don't. I mean, I guess Baines has played well, but I feel like him and Horford would fit so well together. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that it's possible that those two could work really well together. I think it would be hard for Boston to make the money work, especially mm-hmm. with I think they're going to put more of an importance on trying to re-sign Terry Rozier and or Marcus Smart this summer. So one thing, Aaron, Jared Bayless has one more year on mm-hmm. his contract at $8.5 million. So that really wouldn't be that out of a pill for the Magic to swallow, and I feel like he would fill a need. They need another guard, and it gives them more versatility. So I like the idea of making a move with Philly. So it's interesting. You know, we've got two weeks now.
Yep, it's the 21st, so 2 weeks to the day.
It's coming up on us quick. And yep, another team, Atlanta at 30. Atlanta already has two other picks in the first round, and then they have the 34th pick. So they could be a team. Obviously, they're moving into a rebuild, so they might be a little bit more. They might be a little bit tougher to get to part with that pick, but you know, you have options late in the first round if you want to try to move back up.
All right, you guys, we'll be back next week and we'll talk more in depth about this. Of course, 2 weeks time from now, we're going to break all this down for you and then we'll tell you what it's going to mean heading into free agency. For now, this is Do You Believe in Magic? And thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you guys soon. Now let's take a moment to hear from one of our sponsors. Are you looking to buy or sell in the Orlando area? If the answer is yes, there are no better hands to be in than the Price Group of Keller Williams. My wife and I purchased our first home about a year ago, and we could not have been more impressed or appreciative of the Price Group and all of their hard work. And we had been searching for about 6 months and had almost given up hope with our other realtor. We were getting nowhere. But with the Price Group's help, we found our home in less than a month, and we even saved $10,000 off the buyer's original price with their help. Their award-winning team can help you buy, sell, invest, whatever your needs are. So go to choosethepricegroup.com. That's choosethepricegroup.com. Ask for Robert Stack and tell them Preston sent you.